In the name of one God who creates, redeems, and sustains us. I had a choice this week. Do I want to include the first part of the gospel reading about the digestive systems of sentient beings? Or do I go with the other option? Only read the story of Jesus calling a woman a dog. I know all my fellow preachers out there envy me right now. I went with option one, not because I wanted to read a really long gospel, but because there is a relationship between the first and the second stories. In the first story, Jesus is on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee, teaching in parables, feeding huge crowds, healing the sick, and walking on water. His mission to his fellow Jews is urgent. God desires mercy and steadfast love, not sacrifice, not overly burdensome rules placed on the weak by those in power, traditions designed to judge or exclude for no good reason. Jesus makes his teaching crystal clear. God's concern is the spiritual condition of the human heart. What we say and do is a reflection of who we believe God is, what we believe God desires or requires. And what we say and do is a reflection of who we are in our being, who we have become on our life path thus far. The second story appears disconnected from the first. Jesus has moved further north into Gentile pagan territory. However, some scholars state that the area of Tyre and Sidon was also occupied by a very large Jewish population. Now that makes more sense to me because out of nowhere, this Jewish or Gentile woman starts yelling at Jesus, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David." She has heard of Jesus's power to heal. She is familiar with Jesus's lineage, as well as the title of Israel's hoped-for Messiah. She keeps following him, shouting, "Lord, have mercy." Now, it is true that we don't know everything about this woman, but we do know that she is the underdog. Excuse the pun. She is a Canaanite, meaning she is one of the peoples who are the historical arch enemies of Israel. The feeling, by the way, is mutual. She would probably have worshipped Baal. She probably spoke Greek. She would probably have been automatically subjugated to men. As a Gentile woman approaching Jewish men, she would be considered ritually unclean and perhaps untouchable. As a woman with the child who is possessed, she is at the bottom of the barrel of disdain. To top it off, this woman is making an embarrassing and shameful scene. How dare she? Her actions are socially unacceptable and offensive to everyone, Jew and Gentile alike. The ways in which Jesus responds to this woman is the subject of much debate. Jesus first chooses to ignore her. His disciples urge him to use his power to silence her. This is seen by some scholars as the decent thing to do. Jesus' silence, some say, is the most compassionate thing he can do under the circumstances. And as Jesus himself says, he has an urgent message to the house of Israel that must be attended to. He does not need to concern himself with her. Okay, I get that. And then he goes and calls her a dog. What? Now, most, but not all, believe that dog was routinely used as a familiar and favorite insult of the Israelites against the Canaanites. Note that Jesus uses this insult, this slight, right after he instructs the Pharisees to tend to what comes out of their mouths. Words can bite. This text begs so many questions. Does the woman get Jesus to change his mind, make him rethink his response? Does the woman school Jesus, as Debbie Thomas suggests? Is Jesus testing her faith? Is God changeable? Or should we read it, as suggested by Reverend Dr. Joy Moore, more like we would read the book of Job? God already knows her heart, and the story simply helps capture it. Can it be all of the above and more? This last weekend was my 50th, yes, my 50th high school reunion. It got me thinking about some of the fun times and all these folks who have faded into the back of my memory bank. Like the time I was studying in the library. A bunch of us were sitting around a table. The library sacred silence was broken when some very humorous person cracked me up. More than once, the librarian was not amused. She accused me of making a ruckus, but I protested that I had done nothing wrong. I was not the one being funny. All I was doing was responding appropriately. Eyes glaring, she replied, "But you are the catalyst." My vocabulary did not include this word for some strange reason. So without the aid of Google, I looked it up the old-fashioned way. The librarian was telling me that I was an agent that provokes or speeds significant change or action. The Canaanite woman as catalyst, her cries, her frantic seeking, her persistence, her love of her daughter, her faith in a God who insists on mercy first, shifts the possibilities. She accelerates Jesus' self-understanding as having a mission solely to Israel. She claims the God she knows in Jesus and proclaims that even the crumbs of compassion her God leaves behind will satiate. In claiming her God of mercy rather than condemnation, the catalyst challenges her status as undesirable, unlovable, untouchable. She feeds right into Jesus' own teaching. God is concerned about justice and the spiritual condition of our souls. How could Jesus not be inspired? This story does not change the nature of God. God is steadfast and faithful. It is we who have the option of offering to God our whole selves. We have the privilege of claiming who we believe God is and allowing God to reveal God's self to us at every moment and wherever we are on our life path. Some conditions open a pathway for God. Our seeking, our challenging, our agitation, our persistence in prayer, our leaning into our faith and trust in God. Give God inspiration. Be a catalyst. As the Canaanite woman attests to, it is well worth the effort. Amen.